We're back here. Amy Goodman is with us, host of Democracy Now!, heard every morning here Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. Her most recent book is called Breaking the Sound Barrier. Amy, welcome. How are you doing?
It's great to be with you. Sorry I'm late.
You're here. That's what counts. I mean, you're a busy lady. You've got a lot going on.
Well, we're moving into Earth Day. That's happening.
You're moving where?
We're moving into Earth Day on Sunday.
We are moving into Earth Day on Sunday. So tell me, what will you be doing on Earth Day?
Actually, there are Green Fests in Washington and San Francisco, Green Festivals, and I'm going to be speaking at the one here in New York at the Jacob Javits Center. But there are these festivals of celebration of sustainability, you know, businesses involved in sustainable practices, and then talks about what it means to live on this planet in a way that would preserve it as opposed to exploit it. And I think that's absolutely key and why people should support Mark's show, because we're not brought to you by the oil and gas companies, the coal companies, the nuclear companies.
We are not. You certainly are not. So, are you going to Rio, by the way, for that conference? Are you going to be covering Rio live?
Sorry?
Are you going to be covering Rio? Are you going to be covering Rio live when?
Oh, in Brazil?
Yes.
Well, we're going to start off by just covering what's happening at the UN, because often at these meetings that happen, that's Rio plus 20, but the actual deals get struck in meetings beforehand, and that's happening actually this next week at the United Nations. So we will start there, and we'll see what happens in June.
Now, one of the what you just mentioned, I think it and stuff you've been talking about this week, I was thinking about the meeting we've just had in South America, and it's so stunning to me. We talked about this yesterday in the air for a little while, that all the American press talks about are the CIA officers involved with a prostitute in Colombia, as opposed to the groundbreaking conversations that took place at that conference and the independence shown by the Latin American governments.
Oh, I mean, that's so important. In fact, I did my column this week. I write a weekly column on Cartagena and Obama's policies, the real scandal. Yes, you know, we're seeing that the Secret Service and the U.S. Special Forces were involved in this prostitution scandal where they brought prostitutes back to their hotel and, you know, who knows what else. But when you look at the U.S. policies that are foisted on the people of Latin America, it is truly stunning. Whether we're talking about trade or we're talking about continuing the embargo against Cuba, despite what the majority of Americans and American businesses want, whether we're talking about the whole issue of the free trade agreement, this meeting that Obama went to, you know, it was the longest. He stayed for 3 days. That's longer time than any U.S. president stayed in Colombia, and the meeting took place in Cartagena. He has finalized the deal with President Santos of Colombia of the Colombian Free Trade Agreement, so-called Free Trade Agreement. And people may remember when Obama was debating in the presidential debate when he was first running for president, he said he would not support a Colombian Free Trade deal because of the number of unionists that are killed in Colombia. And I think a lot of people who work on that issue's jaws dropped that Barack Obama was saying he would not support a free trade agreement, that he heard the concerns of so many. You know, Colombia is the worst place on earth for unionists, for union members and union organizers. In the last year and a half, more than 34 of them were killed. But here you have President Obama continuing on the heels of President Bush, and the process started with President Clinton before that, and he has finalized this deal. And yet there is no serious safeguards that have been put into place. And this is a serious issue, from trade to the embargo to the whole issue of the drug war, the so-called war on drugs, which is a war on the people of Latin America, not to mention the people of the United States. And the level of unanimity in Cartagena with the presidents across the political spectrum in Latin America. You know, yes, President Obama succeeded, as Bush did, in preventing Cuba from coming to this summit of the Americas, despite the fury of all of the other presidents. That doesn't mean they're happy with it. So they formed their own blocks of Latin American blocks where they don't allow the U.S. in their meetings. Yes, the U.S. succeeded in continuing the ban on Cuba and in continuing to support an embargo against Cuba, which it began 50 years ago. But on the war on drugs, again, it is almost unanimous across the political spectrum among presidents and leaders in Latin America that the war on drugs has failed, that the militarized response is a failure, that the billions of dollars the U.S. spends. I mean, I thought the Republicans and Democrats are concerned about the debt, and yet here the U.S. spends billions of dollars. Look what they've given to Santos in Colombia over the years, and yet here is President Santos saying, no, Plan Colombia, the war on drugs, has not worked. And they're talking decriminalization and legalization, something President Obama, well, perhaps has opened a tiny door of discussion on, but says he's opposed to.
You know, one of the things you said earlier in this were the promises President Obama made during his campaign for president. And there are a lot of people who have issues at the moment who may still be voting for President Barack Obama. I'm curious as to your analysis as covering this. What do you think happened? What do you think happens between the time that somebody who runs almost as a progressive for president of the United States, then these turns take? What that says about who is in power in Washington and where the power lives.
You know, you may hear his rhetoric shifting again because he saw the success of the Occupy movement, adopting some of that language. But in terms of his actions, I mean, yes, President Obama knows the language of organizers and people deeply concerned about the growing gap between rich and poor in the United States. After all, he was a community organizer on the south side of Chicago. But when it came to running the country, he surrounded himself by the very same people that were there before. I mean, whether we're talking about, Tim Geithner, who is a Republican, who just changed his allegiance or changed his party affiliation in order to work with Obama, but, you know, represented the banksters, as they say, the people who are not indicted, not arrested, but who have swindled so many in this country, or whether he's talking about trade. He's kept the same people in trade office when he negotiates deals like the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. He very much remained with the status quo, and the status quo was what we saw. Look what happened in 2008. It was the exploding economy, and you have to take a very different approach, which he has not had the courage to do, and yet there is the political will all over this country to support him. When he runs for office, he has a very good sense of who the silenced majority is. And again, I don't say silent because they're not silent. Silenced because they're often not heard in the corporate media. But people across the political spectrum in this country, from Tea Party to the Occupy movement, who are deeply concerned about what's happening to this country, whether we're talking foreclosures, whether we're talking about the war abroad, or whether we're talking about corporate control and the invasions of our privacy. But he's just simply kept in the same old guard, and we see the treacherous path that takes us down. I mean, I don't think this is about focusing on the person in the White House in this election year. Mm-hmm. I think it's about building movements, people fighting for what they believe in, because the leaders we have in our country, they follow.
I think that last statement is a very powerful statement to think about. I think we do waste a lot of time worrying about sometimes presidential candidates, not worrying about what we're building in America to make a change, which is something I think that Tavis Smalley was on the show yesterday and was on your show today. And that's part of what they're talking about as well. I mean, because their point about the agenda of poverty, the people slipping into poverty in America, is not talked about. It's not brought about.
I mean, Tavis Smiley and Cornel West's book, you know, Rich, The Rich and the Rest of Us. I mean, this point that he's brought out, that, I mean, this is hard to believe, that 150 million Americans, half of Americans, one in two, are poor, new poor, or near poor.
This
is an astounding figure.
And yet ignored.
Right. As he pointed out, if you look at the presidential debates, whether we're talking about McCain versus Obama or we're talking about the Republicans debating in this cycle of the election, they never mention poverty and poor. And we have to deal with this. I mean, maybe what will motivate these candidates are that so many of the people they, you know, that they speak to are slipping into poverty, that will force them to talk about it. But it is an extremely serious issue in this country. And as we spend billions on war, continue to spend billions in Afghanistan, what, at least $2 billion a week? Yet state after state is passing laws that cut Medicare, cut Medicaid. This is frightening. As they quoted Martin Luther King saying, you know, the war, a total paraphrase, but the war makes us poor, and you must link poverty with war.
I mean, what are the stories that you all are working on now that are coming up in the next few days, the next day and next week, do you think?
We're going to have an explosive show tomorrow on the national security state and the invasions of our privacy at every level. And I really encourage people to tune in. People who have not spoken on the air before will speak. It is a very serious issue. You know, the more we have access to the digital world and, you know, with Google and everything else and, you know, how easy it is to do searches and to get information. Remember, there is a flip side of that. The easier it is for us to get information, the easier it is for them to get information on us, for the state to gather information. And it is happening at an accelerated speed that I don't think that our members of Congress even can begin to fathom or understand. And so the corporations write the legislation that facilitates this unless people wise up and realize what is happening to our rights. That's a critical issue that we are going to be talking about. And I think that goes to the attack on our privacy and also the attack on the streets. I'm deeply concerned about the militarization of the police in the United States. You know, we have a law, posse comitatus, which is generally accepted in the United States. Not a good idea to have soldiers marching through the streets of America. We don't think that's a good idea. We are not a dictatorship. But I think the way the state is getting around this is by militarizing the police. Police departments around the country overall are getting billions of dollars. They've got tanks. They've got drones. They have levels of surveillance we have not seen before. And when we see the movements of resistance, for example, the Occupy movement, the crackdown on this is very scary. The level of arrests that are taking place, the tear gassing, you know, you see Davis, the report just came out. The police chief at UC Davis just had to resign because of the tear gassing, the pepper spraying, rather, of the students. We saw what happened in New York, a violent response to peaceful protests. Some of the largest arrests, mass arrests we've seen in history, like 700 people in one day walking over the Brooklyn Bridge, many who thought the police were escorting them over the bridge, and suddenly they get arrested.
Right.
I think these are very serious issues. And then today we're just beginning to see these new series of photographs that the Los Angeles Times got coming out of Afghanistan of U.S. soldiers posing with body parts and mutilated corpses of Afghans. The Los Angeles Times would only print two of them. The Pentagon tried to get them not to print even those two, but they have something like 18, and I'm sure they can get more. I mean, the atrocity after atrocity that is taking place in Afghanistan, when will the leaders of this country have the courage to say, this is not the way. We must bring the troops home. It doesn't help us, and it doesn't help them in Afghanistan.
Amy Goodman, it's always a pleasure to have you with us, and I'm so happy you're here in Baltimore again on at WEA 8.9, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. We're going to look forward to tomorrow morning show. It'll be a very important show on Fuel.
Oh, everyone should tune in.
And we will. And take care of yourself and your throat, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
Oh, thanks so much, Mark. And folks, everyone support WEAA and the Mark Steiner Show. It is absolutely critical that WEAA be supported because it is part of this vital public media network throughout this country that ensures that we get media that's not brought to us by the weapons manufacturers or the insurers, not brought to us by the drug industry, the legal drug industry, right, big pharma, but brought to you by listeners like you who are committed to getting independent information. So I hope you call in and call often.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you.
Always great to have you. Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Stay with us. We'll be right back.